Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from Lamella!
Welcome back to a special edition of the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio, and we're here to celebrate Tottenham Hotspur's victory over Chelsea in the last, I guess this doesn't really have a name, but the last derby between the two teams at White Hart Lane before the stadium closed later this year. It was 2-0. It was great, and we're here to talk about it. Let's get started. The whole gang's with us here today. Leading us off, we have a man who loves his cocaine. Brian, how are you doing today?
I am excellent, and I am drug-free today, so I feel great.
There we go. Next up, a sidekick whose neighbors know what his dick looks like. It's Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you?
Wow. Thank you for that glowing introduction. I'm not going to get weird questions from my neighbor who listens to this podcast. No, nobody listens to this podcast. I'm just kidding.
Good point. Good point. Except that one girl. What was she, a Swansea fan that you met at the
party? She's a West Ham fan.
Oh, well, who cares?
Even worse.
Yeah, who I met the day we beat West Ham. So that's cool.
That's really cool.
But I'm doing great. Like Brian,
wait,
I am.
You and who met her?
Me and my Arsenal supporting wife.
I thought Brett Rainbow was there. I just assumed it was a Brett Rainbow story.
Brett Rainbow is really always with us. If you think.
Oh no,
it.
Greg and Brett Rainbow have their own West Ham fan story.
We do. We'll have to talk about her. We'll have to get Brett on the podcast one day. You know, that given that he's here every week, that might be hard. But yes, that is another West Ham fan. Michael, we have lots of them on this podcast.
They're a plague.
This is the pre-show conversation version of the intro to Wheeler Dealer Radio.
But Ben, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm high on Spurs. Like Brian, I don't need drugs.
There you go. And finally, he's got a face like thunder. It's Michael Cayley. How are you doing today?
I'm feeling good. We need some more synesthetic description.
Did you storm out of any locker rooms since our last podcast?
Exactly. I have a face like thunder. I've got hands like rainbows. you never know what's coming.
Well, guys, we're feeling good for once. Nothing can drag us down. We'll probably even say nice things about Ryan Mason because today was fucking great. Ben, what were you expecting coming into this match?
I mean, I was expecting a comprehensive 5-0 victory to go along with our recent run of form. So I'm a little disappointed. You know, I mean, last New Year's, we hung 5 on Chelsea. Or was that 2 years ago?
That was 2 years ago.
Well,
but thanks
2 years ago, we hung 5 on Chelsea. And so this is kind of a regression as far as I'm concerned.
Keeping the brand strong. That's why you're the sidekick, Ben. Michael, how comprehensive was this victory for Spurs?
Oh, not very.
All right.
Spurs played this is the way I look at it is that, like, Chelsea played a really good game today. Spurs made a couple of little tweaks, a couple of little adjustments, and did the most with their chances. But what I would say is that Spurs won against a Chelsea team that played one of their better matches. Like, that's what's impressive. Not that it was a comprehensive win, but that Chelsea executed their strategy pretty well, and still we beat them.
I mean, for Chelsea, this didn't feel – like the most threatening match against
them. No, but Chelsea aren't threatening. Chelsea, you know, keep you from doing much, and we managed to have one thing that worked twice. And, you know, Eden Hazard easily could have scored a goal or two today.
That's true. I guess they were off the mark a few times, and I guess Hugo Lloris definitely saved our ass more than once. So
I mean, this was always going to be a game of fine margins, and it just broke in our favor. I mean, we played as well as we could against the best team in the league, and, you know, we came out on top. Well, that, I mean,
I think
that's great.
I think what impressed me the most about this performance, and I mean, Brian, I'm curious to hear what you think about this, but it seemed like Spurs had a pretty smart game plan for taking it to Chelsea. It really seemed like we learned some of our lessons from the first match, which I guess is why we didn't start Kevin Vimmer at left back. But we certainly seem to have an idea of what we want to do today, and it more or less worked, although we scored our two goals mostly because Dele Alli is really smart and great, right?
Yeah, I think that Dele Alli being smart and great was a big part of it. But, I mean, if you look at the last game we played against Chelsea, it was actually pretty even. You know, you got a Pedro wonder goal, and then, like you said, Kevin Vimmer being at left back kind of resulted in a breakdown for the Moses goal. And that's really what this game felt like, but we just had more of our first team guys available to us. And, you know, when you have those good players, they get into good positions and they take advantage of, you know, the opportunities that are available to them. And, you know, with respect to Dele Alli, he didn't really get on the ball all that much today, but, you know, he had two opportunities to get into smart positions, make smart runs, and he got excellent crosses into him from Christian Eriksen, who was given a ton of space on the Chelsea right, and we made him count. And like Michael said, on a different day, you know, this could have been 2-2. We could have lost this game. You know, Dele Alli was clinical today, and that was the difference.
Ben, you're our resident Dele Alli skeptic on this podcast. I think most of us would agree he, at a minimum, Dele Alli wasn't at his sharpest at the beginning of the year. I know you would argue that he was kind of poor, but in the two out of the last three games against Southampton and against this game, against Chelsea in this game, he was not only excellent, but scored goals against very good defenders with his head. I mean, is Dele Alli rounding into form?
I mean, he scored two goals in three straight games. I think it's hard to say that he's not. Yeah,
well,
I mean,
this has scored a lot of goals once upon a time. So,
yeah. No, I mean, I think Dele Alli is obviously playing very well lately, and this heading thing seems to be new. I don't remember him getting a lot of those last year, but he now has three in the past three games, which is nice.
Yeah, I remember a headed goal against Leicester last year, but that was more of a diving in the box from what I remember. But, yeah, this, I mean, the movement he had today is, I think, what impressed me the most. And honestly, what he did against Southampton as well, where he just sort of sneaks into a position where they don't anticipate him. And then he's also able to move himself, he's, you know, get up in a position to head these balls where, you know, you think he would get muscled out of those positions given his size and given the size of the defenders, but he finds a way to sort of put these balls on target against very good defenders.
The thing about both of his goals today was that he found the gaps between Cahill and Luis and Azpilicueta, or Azpilicueta and Moses. You know, he wasn't having to contest these headers against like a big, strong defender. He was smart enough to ghost into a really good position. I mean, he has really good striker's instincts inside the box, and that served him well twice today.
Michael, was Dele Alli your man in the match, or was it someone else?
I think that you could make a case for any of Alli, Eriksen, or Wanyama. I thought Dembele was excellent, but he came off a little bit early. I would probably go with Eriksen. I think that his role in this was particularly important because Alli was really playing as a second striker. Spurs 3-4-3 ended up playing very 3-5-2, and Eriksen's job was both to be heavily involved in defense and in press, and to be really a forward once we got up top and be sort of matching up against Gary Cahill and taking advantage of him. Those two, all of our best chances really were the two Eriksen crosses to Alli and Eriksen on the break going just wide from just outside the box. I'd probably go with Eriksen, but that's not to say anything bad about Alli or Wanyama, who are both fantastic.
Which was your favorite assist?
Well, I mean, it's sort of in terms of enjoyment, the first one was so much fun. But the second one was perfectly placed. The first one, he had a little bit more space to work with because of the way that Victor Moses fucked up the offside trap. The second one, he had to feed exactly the space in between Azpilicueta and Moses, and he did.
Well, he also I think the defenders were much closer to him on the second one as well. And it was just really cut up to – oh, God, Christian Eriksen's the best. Oh, I love
Eriksen's having such a great season. Just an Eriksen stat, he is fifth in the Premier League in expected goals plus expected assists. It's Zlatan, Alexis, Firmino, Lukaku, and then Eriksen.
Not Mesut Ozil or Jack Wilshere, though.
Huge numbers in terms of shot creation and in terms of shot creation. While also being a cog in the attack in a lot more less straightforward ways. He's taken 80 shots and assisted 55. These are insane numbers.
It's faintly absurd. Ben and I were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, in that I'm not even a little bit worried about losing Eriksen right now. And some of that's because he just signed a contract, but it just doesn't seem like the blood's in the water with him, even though he's excellent, and I know we talked about this a ton last year. A lot of it's because he's so sort of quietly excellent. He's not banging in tons of goals or, you know, creating tons of direct assists. It's just – I don't know why, but it's I feel like this is so different than where we were a couple seasons ago, where anytime anyone got any good who wasn't Ledley King, we were just terrified of losing them. And I'm not worried about losing Eriksen for a few seasons. And, Ben, I think you were saying you thought he might spend his whole career here.
Yeah, I mean, it really seems like, you know, Eriksen is not quite glamorous enough to be, you know, an obvious target for a Barcelona, you know, and we're not going to sell anybody within the league. I think we've pretty much made that clear, that, you know, Chelsea and City and United are going to have to look elsewhere. I don't see any reason that Eriksen can't spend the next 5 years or year, or however long it takes for him to, you know, get discarded by us. I mean, I think that seems much more likely at this point than him jumping ship. The only like caveat I would say is like, you know, if he carries Denmark to like a phenomenal World Cup or like kills it in the Champions League, then maybe I can see Barcelona, you know, perking their ears up a little bit. But otherwise, you know, I mean, Eriksen attracts so few headlines on this team with Kane and Ali around him. And, you know, I mean, Toby and Hugo at the back, like there's a lot of guys who draw attention away from him, and he just quietly kicks ass week in, week out, which I'm perfectly fine with.
Well, and like Spurs fans like to say he's better than Ozil, which, you know, is maybe true. Maybe not. It is true. I mean, is definitively true, but maybe not exactly true. But I think that's less of an insane statement than it was several years ago. I think it's probably true now. You're getting more bang for your buck with Eriksen, I think. I mean, who would you rather, Brian? If you were making an imaginary team, you know, if you were creating Miami FC and paying them in, you know, bricks of cocaine, who would you rather have on your team? Who do you think is a better midfielder?
I mean,
obviously they do slightly different things, but
yeah, I mean, if I'm creating Miami FC, I want Ozil. But if I wanted, like, if I was doing like Detroit FC or whatever, I would want something that was much more, you know, workmanlike, and I would want Eriksen, because I think that's the real difference between the two, is that Eriksen functions very well within the Spurs and the Pochettino system, and it asks him to do a lot of things like pressing, and we've always talked about how he is very much a key part of our pressing high up the pitch, and because of the positions he gets into, the passing lanes that he cuts off, that sort of thing, and that's an underrated part of his game. Whereas Ozil is, you know, playing sexy passes and Gegen ghosting or whatever it is that we're calling it. And, you know, and this season he's scoring goals. And so while I think Eriksen is great, I think Eriksen is absolutely amazing and he has great value to Spurs. I think if you put him into a different system, maybe he's not as good. I don't know. So for Miami, the hypothetical Miami FC funded by big cocaine money, I suppose I'd take Mesut Ozil.
I mean, that's the thing that like baffles me about Eriksen, is that it's the fact that he isn't a luxury player as a number 10 and is like a guy who grafts for the team and works hard and is incredibly selfless. I mean, that makes him, I wouldn't say unique in that world, but like certainly special in a way that should attract a lot more attention.
It makes it easier to hold on to him, which is insane because you think.
Right. It should be the opposite. I mean, he scores goals, he creates chances, and he is a functional part of a system and not like a guy like Mesut Ozil who, you know, disappears from games when he's not destroying them.
It's very weird. It's very weird. But I guess the fact that he does all this scut work just takes a level of sheen off of him, which is good for us because he's probably going to be here for a while, and it's excellent. We talk enough about Christian Eriksen on this podcast without – we don't need a good game for him to do that because we love him anyway. I think someone who we don't always give the praise that some other Spurs fans give is Victor Wanyama. And today I think he deserves all the praise in the world because he was just a monster. Right, Michael?
He was fantastic. This is a system that works very well for him. But he was all over the field. There were several big moments in the match. He had on Costa. There was a Danny Rose had like a really bad turnover in the first half, and Wanyama just comes back and just trucks him, wins the ball, and keeps it moving. Chelsea were pressing very high up the pitch. This game was pressed about as high as you're going to see a Premier League game be pressed over the course of 90 minutes. And he was I don't think he was ever caught in possession. He was constantly like just sort of quickly metronoming the ball around, not letting Chelsea press. So even with the ball, he was very strong. And defensively, the ground he covered was covering as much ground as Conte was against him.
Wanyama plays a very physical style. Do you think – we'll get to that in a minute. But do you think because of his limitations as a passer or as an attacker, let's say, do you think that this is the formation we play today? Should we be seeing that all the time now? Or do you think that's something that we're going to reserve for special occasions?
I'd love to hear what you guys think. I really can't get over the feeling that we should just do this all the time now.
I agree. And I think we can plug Eric Lamela in very easily when he's healthy.
Oh, totally. We stomped Watford in this system. We stomped Hull in this system. We survived a sort of in-form Arsenal team without our best players in this system. And we just beat Chelsea in this system.
It maximizes our personnel. I'd rather have Dyer in midfield than Wanyama, but if we have both of them on the team, this is how you use them at the same time. I mean, maybe if we're rotating guys, we might want to switch it up a little bit. But I liked it a lot. Ben?
I mean, I love the back three. I think it gets a lot out of certain players that the 4-2-3-1 doesn't. You know, I think with a system like ours that depends so heavily on the fullbacks to get up and down the pitch, allowing them to be wingbacks kind of gives them an easier time of contributing offensively without being, you know, a problem defensively. It's less wear and tear on their bodies to do so. Like Michael said, it's really good for Victor Wanyama. My only reservation is when Eric Lamela is healthy and we have the ability to play our starting formation from last year, you know, is that better than what this back three looks like? And I'm not sure it's not, but, you know, I don't think Eric Lamela exists. So until that happens, it's really a moot point for me.
He's just a magic trick that Benjamin Stambouli played on all of us, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no reason not to kind of ride this hot hand for now.
One thing I like to say about the formation, I am 100% stealing this from Mike Goodman, who's on a podcast you might have heard of called Double
Speaking Pivot. Of people that I'm not convinced are real.
Yeah. One funny thing about this is that this is a great example of why tactics aren't formations and formations aren't tactics, because Spurs have made this, like, big switch to a back three, and we're basically the same game. It's like little tweaks on the things that we do that work well, but it's clearly Pochettino Spurs in every recognizable aspect. Just build up works a little bit differently, and the fullbacks play a little bit higher.
Right. I mean, those tweaks are important nuances to, you know, how the game develops and what people's individual responsibilities are. But yeah, it's not revolutionizing. We're still a counter-pressing side that develops attacks, you know, in exactly the same way. It's just, you know, where they stand on the field and how those markings work and how people operate in transition and in possession.
But I think it compresses our attackers in a way into the space that they want to be in. It allows Wanyama not to do things he doesn't want to do. It frees Alderweireld and Vertonghen and Dyer to do more passing if they like doing it. It fits right. Every
and surging forward, you know, because they have that spare man at the back to cover. You know, it makes that handoff a lot easier when if Toby wants to charge down the right wing, you know, he doesn't have to worry about Dyer rotating back into defense. Dyer's already there.
And if we want to slot our backup fullbacks in, it's much less taxing on them because whatever else you want to say about Trippier and Davies regarding their relative strengths or weaknesses, neither of them has the foot speed of our starters. And when you play in this back three system like we saw with Trippier against, Watford, whoever the hell we played, he doesn't have as much – he doesn't have to haul ass back quite as much when there's a back three covering space for him. I don't know. I like the system a lot. Brian, do you have any additional thoughts on the system before we move on to physical harm?
I think my only trepidation with the system is born of what we do when the theoretical person that is Eric Lamela comes back. Because kind of our conundrum with the attacking band in the 4-2-3-1 has always been, all right, who's the third guy in that attacking band? Is the third guy Dele Alli? Or is the third guy Heung-min Son? Or is the third guy Eric Lamela? And I think Eric Lamela is too good and too important to what this team does to leave out. But if you have Dele Alli scoring 7 goals in his last 4 games, how do you not play him? And there's certainly no way you're dropping Christian Eriksen. So for me, you know, making the decision between Wanyama and Dembele, or Wanyama and Dyer in midfield is a much easier decision than making the decision to drop one of Lamela and Dele Alli up front.
There's another tweak, you know, that is scary that we can do, which is to leave out Wanyama, in a way that like Chelsea against bad teams will roll out like a Conte and Cesc midfield. If we do a Dembele Eriksen midfield and allow Lamela and Alli to play ahead of him, you know, that's not a completely insane idea.
I feel like we always get burned when we put out our super disrespectful lineup.
We've played Wanyama as a lone central destroyer with Eriksen as his partner, and it's worked great. Mm. I think you can certainly fit Eriksen and Dele and Lamela into the same squad, at least against weaker teams. The other thing this does is it gets around our issue of Spurs aren't any good without Moussa Dembele. In a back three, we can handle resting Dembele as much as he needs to be rested, so that he can be 100% for games like Chelsea.
Well, it's really exciting to see that Spurs have finally developed a plan B, or maybe it's a new plan A, but we seem to have more than one way we can play now. Even if, like you said, Michael, it's not like we're reinventing the wheel here, but it's nice to see us have a different look that suits some of our personnel a little bit more.
Michael, would you ever countenance allowing Dembele to be the defensive midfielder at the expense of Wanyama in this system?
I'm totally into seeing it.
Would that be playing him as like a forward destroyer like we did in Pochettino's first year, or would it be – are you talking about –
No, he'd be the Wanyama.
So you're talking about playing him where Wanyama is as opposed to doing the same.
Right, and then Eriksen playing next to him.
Okay.
Right, it would be Dembele's role, except he's not supposed to dribble high up the pitch as much.
Oh, I just wouldn't want to not see that, you know? It's so great.
I mean, Dembele is good in the tackle. He is very mobile in midfield. You know, I think he's intelligent enough a player that, you know, he can be coached into playing that role. He's obviously better than Wanyama at the things he's better than. And if you can keep that without losing too much defensive, you know, stability, against a bad team where you have, you know, Eric Dyer, Toby, and Vertonghen back there covering, you know, that could be a real attacking force. Just food for thought.
Food for thought. That's what we give you here on Wheeler Dealer Radio. Also, really bad bits.
Yeah, I'm not saying, I'm just asking questions.
Just asking questions. That's what we do here. The regardless of what formation Spurs play in, what it seems is a very big constant with this team is physical violence. This was a rough, rough match. I think we saw Wanyama was particularly nasty. Danny Rose was trying to eat several Chelsea players' souls. I mean, it was pretty brutal. Brian, as Eric Lamela sits at home, sharpening his elbows, dreaming of an FA Cup final against Chelsea, who do you think he would approve of most in today's match? Who earns the Eric Lamela Memorial Award for outstanding performance of excessive violence?
I think it's probably Danny Rose. And, I mean, what Danny Rose...
shithead, I love him.
He probably should have been carded at least twice in the first half. And then I don't think he actually picked up a card until like the 85th minute, maybe. So, you know, like you said, it was a comprehensive effort from our team to just beat the crap out of Chelsea. And that's fun Pochettino Spurs, like that kind of physical game is exactly what we want. And against a team like Chelsea, which has its own collection of shitheads, you know, it was nice to see us play that game, but also keep our cool. I mean, you see towards the end of the match when we're up 2-0, Diego Costa barges into the back of Eric Dyer. And Eric Dyer basically just turns around and grins at him and throws his arms out to his side like, bro, what? And, you know, I mean, like, you know, Ali keeps his composure throughout the game despite, you know, taking a few knocks. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff that, you know.
They had their act together today in a way they didn't last season.
I mean, I think a lot of, like, you know, We got burned by people in the media last year about our mental makeup and whether the young players were ready, and I think a lot of that's a crock of shit. But I mean, this was really this week. It really looked like everybody had their head on straight, and we were composed while also being complete and total shitheads the entire time, and it was nice.
Brian, you're a Spurs fan from further back than I think you and Ben are the furthest back on this podcast, maybe the masthead. Outside of Ed, I suppose. But is it surreal for you to watch? I mean, because you saw, like, OG Mourinho Chelsea, like, when he first came into the league and they were just steamrolling people. Is it satisfying or weird for you to see a Tottenham team sort of going toe-to-toe and physically intimidating and a Chelsea team? Is it strange to see us play this way against them?
I mean, it's strange to see a Tottenham team that's physically intimidating at all. I mean, the thing about Tottenham is, you know, we've always been considered a bit of a soft touch. You know, when we got Wilson Palacios, it was like a revolutionary moment, the fact that we were, like, actually going to play a defensive midfielder. And now that our whole team is fucking shitheads, it's just, like, it's unrecognizable in the best way because it hasn't come at the expense of our ability to play, like, gorgeous football and do spectacular things. Which is always the fear.
It's pretty great. Michael, I mean, watching Eric Dyer wind up Diego Costa has to be one of the best things in world football, correct?
It was pretty good. I mean, I thought that Pedro did a pretty good job of it earlier in the match. watching Chelsea get frustrated over the course of the match, and watching Spurs sort of go in with a physical plan but not sort of get ahead of themselves. You know, they outkick Chelsea without, you know, losing their heads.
Some of that's being at home. You're going to get away with more at home.
I mean, if you look at, like, the Battle of the Bridge last year, that was, like, a fucking just bloodbath. And the fact that, like, we just didn't see that from Spurs. It was, like, composed shittiness. Like, that moment
Eric Dyer wasn't trying to end anyone's career like he was with Cesc Fabregas that day. Like,
well, when Diego Costa, like, chest-bumped Dyer and, like, got in his face and then, like, tweaked his ear for some reason. And Dyer just kind of, like, shrugged it off, like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like, I was very impressed by that, like, moment of maturity and clear-headedness. You know, that we never let it degenerate into anything. We didn't rise to his bait. We didn't let it degenerate into, like, a slaughterhouse.
It was fun to watch. Rose but...
quietly kicked people up and down the pitch.
Well, I don't know about quietly, but he was certainly kicking people up and down the pitch. Yeah, this was pretty fucking spectacular. Brian, where would you put this in the performance of the season? I know that we were talking about our game on the weekend is one of the most comprehensive performances we've seen from Spurs in a while. But, I mean, is this better than the City game? Is this – I mean, where would you put this?
I mean, if you're talking about, like, what games this season have been most enjoyable, this was a lot of fun. But in terms of, like, our best performances of the season, I think the Watford match was better. I think that the City game was probably better. But, I mean, Chelsea matches, at least for me, just they mean so much more. I mean, other than Arsenal, I think Chelsea is the opponent that I care most about beating every year. And actually, I enjoy the rivalry with Chelsea more than the Arsenal rivalry, just because, like, for me, the Arsenal matches are never quite as emotionally charged. And maybe it's just because I don't know any Arsenal fans, but I know a lot of Chelsea fans. But
I think even divorced from that, I would agree with that statement in that.
But yeah, I mean, you talk about, like, the battle at the bridge and, you know, like, it just feels like, in terms of, like, you know, the physicality and the emotion that is in the games against Chelsea, they're always so much more intense. And I enjoy those games so much more than the Arsenal games. And maybe it's because I spend, you know, Arsenal matches, you know, curled in the fetal position or drinking heavily or whatever. And whereas Chelsea, I'm just, like, pacing around the living room swearing and drinking. So maybe it's my own personal interaction with the match. But I find these matches against Chelsea, especially when we play well like this, much more satisfying than just about anything.
Yeah, it was some crazy shit. I don't have any good follow-up. That was good, Brian. This match – go ahead, Ben.
I'm just trying to wrestle with my feelings about these two rivalries. Like, I mean, you know, Arsenal is obviously Arsenal. You know, that's a rivalry since time immemorial, you know, fraught with significance. Chelsea, like, the significance of the Chelsea matches, you know, I think it's they've increased in significance as we have gotten better. And it's sort of like, you know, they're the big bad who, you know, we are making them have to respect us on the pitch. And I think that adds a different tenor to these matches than Arsenal, who, rightfully or wrongly, you know, I think we've always kind of seen as, you know, a team that we, by all rights, are equal to, even when we weren't. You know, kind of like how West Ham sees us, and it's ridiculous. I feel like, you know, we felt that way about Arsenal prematurely, and that now when we beat them, you know, it's not as satisfying because we almost feel like, why wouldn't we beat Arsenal? Like, we're, you know, but
well,
with Chelsea, it's like Chelsea is kind of like that final hurdle of, like, you know, they're the end boss of the game.
I think there's a few things going on here, and I think you're right in that. I think you're both right. In that, you know, Arsenal's sort of – that's the tradition that's handed down to you, and you learn to hate them. And, you know, I'm sure if we grew up in England, especially North London, we would know Arsenal fans, and it would be a lot – or more Arsenal fans. Ben, you're actually married to one, so it's a little different for you. Yes. But
this lives very close to home.
But, you know, it might live a little closer to home for all of us if we grew up in that environment. But I think putting that aside, putting the cultural or, you know, community aspect of it aside – certainly, I think what has happened on the pitch in the last, like, in the last 10 years, let's say, has made Chelsea a lot more hateable. There's been more specific animosity between Chelsea and Spurs than I think there has been with Arsenal and Spurs.
In terms of what's gone on and what the games have meant and what they've like sort how they've sort of impacted us. I just don't think there's the comparable, like the bad blood of what has just happened in these games over the last 10 years. Like Arsenal, we hate them and we want to finish above them, but the games against Arsenal haven't been costing us things or turning into ugly matches in the way that our matches against Chelsea have. And you combine that with Chelsea's a new money team that a lot of people find still find kind of gross on some level, if only because Abramovich is kind of gross. And if you combine that with the fact there's people like John Terry on the team and Tories like Frank Lampard, I mean, they're easy to hate even without anything else. And then you combine the fact that these shitheads have had nasty matches with us that have left a bad taste in our mouth. I mean, I don't think you're unreasonable, and there's something a little more visceral about the Chelsea games these days.
Yeah, and there's also been a lot of moments. Like, I mean, we had the cup final against Chelsea. We lost
a cup final, a cup final against Chelsea.
Right. They kept us out of the Champions League. They kind of ruined our title last year.
Remember those shitty goals in that FA Cup semifinal that like shouldn't have stood?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like
you know, there's just there's a lot of really nasty moments that like were fraught with significance.
Battle of the Bridge, like,
you know, yeah, it's just like you just hate them. They're like the faceless villains in any movie that you just can hate.
I feel like
unreservedly
for people of like about our age, you've like learned that Chelsea hate. Like you have experienced all the reasons that Spurs fans would fucking hate Chelsea. Whereas with Arsenal, you might have your own reasons, but you've inherited it. You're just sort of taught that's the way it is. And there are plenty of reasons to hate Arsenal. There's plenty of reasons to learn to hate Arsenal, but it's a lot more ingrained.
Right, we've had our share of fucking gross matches with Arsenal and significant matches with Arsenal. And
yeah, there hasn't been like a battle of the bridge with Arsenal. Like there's been some ugly matches, but
yeah, I mean, I will say, like, if this game was a 2-0 victory over Arsenal, I would be a lot more excited than I am about the match against Chelsea. There's just something about that will never go away.
Well, it's sleeping upstairs from you. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It'll never go away.
Never.
That's what marriage is. You're stuck with it forever.
No.
But yeah, this was good. So I think this match, beyond how we feel about the rivalries, it certainly, I think, changes how we've been looking at Spurs in the league and what their position is moving forward. Let's start out very plainly. Michael, are Spurs in the title race?
Short answer, easiest answer is yes. Spurs could win the title. That would not, like, if Spurs won the title, people wouldn't be like, that's impossible given that they were in third place.
It wouldn't be a fairy tale.
Exactly. No, there's not nearly enough, racism and domestic abuse for a fairy tale. But Spurs are, I think that the, betting markets have Spurs like 12-1. I'm working on a variety of projections. I kind of hate all of them, which is why I haven't been publishing them. But I've got it closer to like 10% for Spurs to win the title. So that's a real amount. On the other hand, Spurs are behind Liverpool and Chelsea, and both of those teams have better numbers and more. They've got better goal difference. They've got better expected goal difference. They've got more points. It would be quite a thing for Spurs to overtake them. I don't expect it to happen. I'm much more concerned about the top four race. But a 1 in 10 shot is nothing. Not nothing. Enough things break right, enough Liverpool players get injured, enough luck runs our way. It could happen.
So let's talk
about... What do you say we're, like... To me, it feels like the title race is just Chelsea, and then Spurs, City, Arsenal, United, Liverpool are all in the same mix. And if any one of them emerged as a viable title winner, that would be fine. Or that would be reasonable. Is that the case, or is Liverpool enough ahead of us that it's really a Liverpool-Chelsea title race that we're kind of an also-ran in?
I would say it's Chelsea. I would say it's definitely Chelsea. Beyond that, I would say that, like, I think that if I had to pick the, I think that there is a small gap between Liverpool and Chelsea and the rest of the league. City are a little bit complicated in that, but I would say that like Liverpool are both ahead of everyone but Chelsea in points and ahead of everyone but Chelsea in terms of underlying numbers and performance, and they don't have two competitions to compete in. So like, I think that it's mostly Chelsea. Chelsea are greater than 50% favorites at this point. But I think that Liverpool are clearly the next most likely to team to take the title from them, but not by a huge amount. Does that kind of make sense?
Michael, how far ahead of Spurs would you say Liverpool are? Because I looked at the table after this game today, and I was actually a little surprised to see us just 2 points behind them. I just figured maybe because I have enough Liverpool fans on my timeline and that madness is seeped into my brain that they were just a little bit further beyond us than that. And I know that they've played better than us this year, but I was just shocked to see, in terms of the table, they were only 2 points better than us. How, in realistic terms, how much better is Liverpool than Spurs right now?
I mean, they are – their attack is ridiculous. They're creating high quality chances and chances in dangerous areas at a much higher rate than we are. We've taken about the same number of shots they've taken. We've taken about the same number of shots as they have, but we've taken 50 more shots from outside the box. They're creating chances in dangerous areas in a way that we don't nearly to the same degree. I'm a little more skeptical that their defense is as much better than ours as it is in the numbers. It keeps working. They keep not giving up chances, but it's a
weird system. So you're saying their defense is nominally better than ours, even though we've let in 9 fewer goals than they have?
Yep.
So we're on the same goal difference right now.
Yep. I mean, they've conceded 157 shots to our 188. They've conceded, 18 big chances to our also 18. Fewer shots and about the same number of them being very dangerous chances. I guess the thing you would say is that it makes a real difference when your goalkeeper is Hugo Lloris as opposed to Karius or Mignolet. So that's probably making up some of the difference right there.
9 goals feels like a lot for us to be seemingly that far behind on paper. I mean, is that an accident or is that luck?
I mean, I think that it is. You've got a combination of. I mean, they've conceded a bunch of dumb goals because of Mignolet or Karius, but they've also conceded a bunch of goals from very good. I mean, teams have not been finishing well against Tottenham this year. Eden Hazard does not miss that chance that often that he missed today.
Well, sucks to be him.
It's because we're just so intimidating, I guess.
Exactly. He doesn't want to get that check cash by Victor Wanyama. So let's put the title race aside. Brian, when you look at where we stand right now, which is in third place going to an FA Cup match, which, God willing, we're going to rest some people during, how confident do you feel about Spurs' ability to finish in the top four?
I remain confident in our ability to finish top four. I think that Chelsea, Liverpool, United, and us are at the moment clearly very good. I think that there are some worries with United about whether, everything's sustainable, like if they have a couple of injuries or, specifically if Zlatan gets hurt, what can they do? Yeah, I'm pretty confident. I think we are going to, over the course of the season, I think we're going to outpace City. And I think this might actually be the year that we finish above Arsenal.
God, don't say that out loud.
But so
I think so, too.
Don't say it out loud.
Mind the cap, bitches.
People are going to tweet us this podcast if we're wrong. But, just on balance of how everybody has performed this year, I feel most confident about those four teams. I mean, you look at Spurs, we have, 42 points right now? And we are 7 points off the top. And we basically went like 2 months of the season without winning a game. We drew a ton of matches in a row. It's only like 5 or 6 weeks, whatever. But, you know.
And I can count on one hand how many times we probably started our preferred first 11.
Yeah. And so you're talking about we've put ourselves in this position with, like you said, limited health to our best players, with a run of results that was, you know, while we had a long unbeaten streak, we weren't getting, you know, max points from easy game or easier games. And we're still in this position. And, you know, we have a lot of the big teams still have to come to White Hart Lane. We still have to have, I believe United has to come to White Hart Lane, and Arsenal still has to come. And is Liverpool still? I believe Liverpool's at home, we still have. But the really only big away fixture we have is City away. And so.
And that's coming up.
I can't help but feel confident.
So who do you think we finish above?
If I had to pick today, like based on the current squads that are available to all the teams and based on their current forms and, you know, the injury positions that everybody's in, I would say that the table as it is holds true and we wind up finishing ahead of United, City, and Arsenal.
Who misses out? Who do you think misses out on top four?
City and Arsenal, I think, are the two most likely.
No, I mean, one of them is going to have to make it.
United.
United,
yes. Sorry. Yeah. never mind.
I thought I answered that question correctly. I was
You did.
I mean, it's easy to forget that United is a good team.
Yeah, I'm just not used to it. And
decade.
Ugh, anyway, sorry about that. I mean, Ben, who's you're looking at Spurs finishing top four. Let's say top four and not talk about the title race because that's still a little bit of a long shot I mean, which team scares you the most in terms of bumping Spurs? Is it United?
I mean, again, we're in a position now where it takes two teams to bump us of City, Arsenal, and United. Arsenal are struggling lately. They just got another big injury.
They had a heroic 3-goal comeback this week. Come on.
That's true. It was their miracle at Istanbul. I don't know. I mean, like, I'm looking at the table and it's like, I kind of agree with Brian. It'll go Chelsea, Liverpool, Spurs, United. But the idea of like Arsenal finishing sixth is like, I can't conceive of that. Like,
that
it doesn't
would
happen.
Be amazing.
You know, Arsenal finished the top four for the last like 15 years.
What was that?
For them
stat
to not only
saying?
Miss it, but to finish sixth. Like,
what was that stat we were talking about? They like over the like since the Premier League started, Arsenal spent the equivalent of 9 calendar years in fourth place.
Yeah. That's correct. 3,000 plus days.
Jesus.
So yeah, roughly 9 years in fourth place. Like they live there.
That would be really great. It would make me very happy if they missed out on the Champions League next year. Just for the Arsenal fan TV videos. Like really, really blood, really fan. That's what I want to see.
And I don't think that's unreasonable.
We care about the important things here.
I mean, Champions League for Spurs, whatever. Meltdowns on Arsenal fan TV. That's what I'm really here for. The other sort of big picture issue that I think is – it really popped up. I think it was a bullshit rumor, but Spurs fans can't help themselves, so we're all talking about it. People are saying that Real Madrid is monitoring Dele Alli and is thinking about bidding on him in the summer. We talked earlier about we don't think Spurs are a team that sells into England when we don't want to anymore. Michael, are you worried about losing Dele Alli to Real Madrid? I know you're worried about losing him to Real Madrid. Are you worried about losing to Real Madrid this year?
Yeah, it's hard for me to see that happening this year. You know, I think that, you know, the decision making process at Real Madrid is weird. But it doesn't really like it's not like Real Madrid needs to pay full freight right now on a Dele Alli who's got like 4 years left remaining on his Tottenham contract and who is not a finished product. Like if you have Real Madrid's money, why wouldn't you just wait until he is a finished product? In, you know, a year or two. and his contract has run down a bit and buy him then.
If he was David Ali, I could see them going after him like they did with Isco. But
you know, you look at Gareth Bale, like after the 3-1 Inter game, it was like they didn't move on him then. You know, they waited a couple of years. And then they bought him after he had his insane Gareth Bale year. Like, there's no reason they need to buy the risk of a 20-year-old, 21-year-old not developing as expected. You know, they can buy him right as he's approaching peak and you know, spend whatever it takes on a guy that they know is going to be a good player.
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, I might be worried about, like, a United or a City or a Chelsea or someone who wants to get him because he's English with a lot of money to spend. But, I think we've clearly said ever since Luka Modric, we are not selling in England to our rivals anymore. And I just don't – until he steps it up another gear, I don't see why Real Madrid would want him this early. They don't need a player who's still developing – like that, they can, like you said, Ben, they can afford to wait.
Yeah, and the thing that's changed, you know, within England is that, you know, these teams all are our rivals. You know, like, we are a credible fixture in a top six right now. Like, yes, there's a big money gap and whatever, but in terms of what's happening on the pitch over the last few years, you know, we are not like a second tier team. It doesn't feel like we're a second-tier team to the degree that you need to leave Tottenham to go to Man United, who is below us in the table, you know, to, like, accomplish something with your career. There's none of that. It's just the money, you know. And when money's in play, there's nobody I would rather have my back than Daniel Levy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm convinced Luka Modric got sold to Real Madrid. We flogged him there purely to keep him out of Chelsea. Which was smart because...
Yeah, there's no question about it. We took a $10 million or £10 million pay cut on the sale just so we didn't have to sell him to Chelsea.
Can you imagine how terrifying Chelsea would have been the last, like, 6 years if they'd gotten their hands on Luka Modric?
Yes.
I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think about that at all.
The other thing with Levy that's important here is that of all of our key players, the only one who isn't locked up into at least 2020 is Moussa Dembele, who's getting old. Or is Vertonghen also till 2019? Anyway, he's getting old too. You know,
yeah,
we have extended contracts on all of these guys. So it would be very expensive for anyone to buy out. There's no waiting out the contract on any of Spurs' key players. Teams would have to pay full freight, whatever Levy is asking for.
I mean, I think
our starting 11 contract years, it's Hugo 2022, Walker 2019, Vertonghen 2019, Dembele 2019, and then everybody else is after 2020 or 2021 or 2022. Like, those don't even feel like real numbers.
The strategy we clearly have is we're not letting anyone go. We're not letting anyone go we don't want to let go before the stadium's opened. Like, I think they want to walk in there. I mean, I think they want to keep this team together for core reasons, but I don't think anybody's leaving until the stadium opens. Like, they want this team together in some form or fashion on their terms when they play their first game at the new stadium. And I don't think we're going to let anybody big go before that. Hopefully not after that, but man, it'd be nice.
You know what?
To
just keep being good, and it's not a problem.
Exactly. Just win a league or two, and then no one will want to leave Spurs. It'll be great. It'll be fantastic.
Right. Just like nobody wanted to leave Leicester after last year. Oh wait, N'Golo Kanté left, and now Leicester are a fucking tire fire. I hate you so much, Leicester.
Speaking of players.
I might hate Leicester more than Chelsea and Arsenal, to go back to that rivalry conversation.
It's a fairy tale, Ben. God. It's a fairy tale.
I wish nothing but death and fire upon these people.
I did. There was that. Someone put it out a tweet today. It was like, when's the last time 99% of England wanted Spurs to win a game? And all I could think of, I think as you mentioned it, Ben, was it's like, oh, all you fuckers rooted against us last year when Leicester was going for the league. Fuck you. Speaking of big players leaving teams smaller than them, Alexis Sanchez seems to be really angry. I don't have any real question here, but Brian, wouldn't it be great if Alexis Sanchez left Arsenal?
I mean, it would be amazing for my prediction that we're going to finish above them.
I mean, I don't think he's going to do it during the winter window.
No, I mean, I think, it's just, it's the kind of stuff that surrounds Arsenal when they have, you know, stupid results like, you know, they're drawing 3-3 away at Bournemouth or Bournemouth or however we're supposed to pronounce it this week.
Istanbul Bournemouth,
yes. I don't believe it'll actually happen, but it'd be great. It would be amazing if, you know, all at the same time, just Ozil left, Sanchez left, they decided Giroud wasn't good enough anymore, and then everybody just left. It'd be great.
Ben, how great would that be? I don't have any real discussion points here. I just want to talk about Alexis Sanchez leaving Arsenal and how funny it would be.
Yeah, I mean, it would be hilarious, especially if he like left for China or something.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. Oh my God, the meltdown that would be. I would just like refresh Piers Morgan's Twitter account like constantly until I saw something new.
And I mean, Alexis's contract is up not in the summer of 2017, but summer of 2018. So they've got to get that settled, or they're, you know, looking at what they can get for him.
I mean, so let's talk about this seriously first before we make any more jokes. Say Sanchez decides to leave. Alexis decides to get out of there. Either he runs out his contract, he goes to China, or like Real Madrid decide they want him or something. I don't know. PSG, probably. That seems more like a Arsenal star exit point. I mean, do you think this reasonably affects Arsenal's like standing, ability to recruit players? I mean, does this hurt Arsenal, or are they just going to be able to take that money and spin it into another like good player that some other giant team doesn't want anymore?
I mean, it doesn't hurt their standing. I think they're still able to buy whoever they want. The problem is, you know, there's not a lot of people in the world who are better than Alexis Sanchez. I think the rumor is that they would buy Marco Reus, who is, you know, going to be perfectly suited to hanging out in the injury room with Cazorla and Wilshere. there's just not a lot of guys who replace Alexis Sanchez. Alexis Sanchez is easily one of the best players in the world.
It still frustrates the hell out of me that Arsenal was able to get him. Michael, how great was the description of Alexis Sanchez after the Bournemouth game? I just want to talk. Can you talk about the description of Alexis Sanchez that made its way into the paper?
I just want to know more about who that source was, because they are a poet.
What was it? What was it for those who didn't quite get our joke at the beginning of the show?
He had a face like thunder.
Face like thunder. Well, everyone else was apparently feeling really good about themselves.
Exactly.
No, that is something I would believe about an Arsenal locker room after a game like that. I would absolutely believe it. Probably because I want to.
The simplest explanation for this is that Alexis Sanchez is, like, watching him on the pitch. He's an insane person. And he wants to win so much, and he wants to win every single game so much, that he plays every single game at speeds that no one should be able to play. And then when he doesn't win, he gets super mad. Like, that's the most likely thing here. But, you know, apparently when he gets super mad, his facial expression can only be described synesthetically using things that are not things that you can even possibly look at, which I think is beautiful.
Maybe he looked like Thor, who is the god of thunder. So...
He looked like a loud noise that scares dogs. That was his face. His face was like a dog hiding under a couch.
Or maybe he was just like yelling thunder noises and they were coming from his face.
So like what's happening? Like Cazorla's coming over to congratulate him on a great game and he's just like kaboom and keeps walking. Kablam!
Wenger starts his team talk. Excuse me, Kablamo.
Excuse me, well, this game was an important slap. Oh, God. God bless dysfunctional Arsenal stories. They're how we make it through the long winter here. Guys, I think that's it. We had a long podcast. It was very impromptu. I'm very happy with how it went. Ben, you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
No.
None?
I mean, we're going to win the league, but that nobody needs to hear that from me. They know that already.
Exactly. They know it in their hearts. They know it in their hearts. Bang, where can people find you on the internets?
You can find all of my bad tweets at Gary Rootbeer on Twitter and all of my good tweets at Brett Rainbow on Twitter.
Brian, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
I don't know. I'm not going to promise that we're going to win the league, but we will finish above Arsenal. So there's that.
We're going to eat a lot of words in a few months.
I definitely tweeted a mind the gap joke at the short fuse just now. So sorry, everybody.
Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
I am on Twitter at Brian with a Y, BryanThFC.
Is that the only place?
I'm on Instagram at Brett Rainbow.
Okay, there we go. And finally, Michael, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Dele Alli is the English Thomas Mueller, and you can find all of my discussions of West Ham fandom at Brett Rainbow.
Your spittle encrusted discussions of West Ham. Oh, that awful, awful, terrible beauty who spat a lot at the bar and said very naughty words. What a time to be alive. I am your host, Skipjack. You can find my bad tweets online at Skipjack0079, and you can find Ben's tweets online at Brett Rainbow. For Ben Daniels, for Brian, for Michael Cayley, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I am Skipjack. Come on, you Spurs.